Welcome back to the Ojogo Bonito podcast. I'm your host, Jay Caron, and let's get into this. Before we start today's podcast, I'd like to apologize for not having an episode last week as I was ill, and we couldn't arrange anything at short notice. But today we have our panel of Mr. Ferguson and Mr. Jennings. Welcome back.
Good morning, JK. And I'll apologize too, because I was actually ill last week as well. I had this horrible hacking cough that seems to be going around at the moment. So I guess you're in good... I hope you're in good company.
Mr. Jennings, what have you been thinking about the round of 16, the World Cup? The end is upon us. Club football is on the horizon once again.
Certainly is, JK, and quite a few surprises throughout the tournament, from interesting VAR calls right the way through to some inspired performances from certain nations. Japan reaching the round of 16, I thought was tremendous. Senegal, I think, were always going to be England's fixture in the last 16. But looking at Morocco, I think probably is the surprise package of the World Cup. And I think getting the result of the tournament against Spain, Saudi Arabia beating Argentina, of course, is a huge result that I very much doubt anybody would have seen coming. But in terms of the actual knockout round fixture against Morocco for Spain, Morocco coming out trumps in that fixture, I think is so far the result of the tournament.
I would say that I'm not as surprised by Morocco beating Spain, because I do think Spain are toothless up front and they do play a pedestrian style of football. I get the philosophy. The philosophy is simple. Death by 1,000 passes. But I believe when you have such an energetic side as Morocco were, even though they were sitting in a, I would say, relatively mid-block, I didn't watch the game, but I only watched the penalties. But
it never felt like Spain were gonna win that game, to be honest with you. Because I did watch that. I think that game happened actually while I was off ill, and I watched it. And for Luis Enrique, who has since been sacked or resigned, I forget which one he either jumped or he was pushed, but he was very much at the end of the gangplank. For him to come out after that match and say, "I was happy with the way Spain played," you're happy with the fact that Spain went out in the round of 16 to, no offence, Morocco.
Yeah, it's poor. I watched Spain a couple of times during the tournament, and it was like watching... let's not kid ourselves. Spain have won three back-to-back international tournaments, right? When they were at their absolute prime, playing very, very silky football, built upon tiki-taka football, triangles, etc., all stuff that we've seen spoken about a lot. But this was much more static. And the Costa Rica game, where I said right at the beginning of the tournament that I thought Costa Rica were the worst team in the competition.
I was so close to sending you a message, because there was a point on the final match day where Costa Rica were going through. I had the email ready to send.
And I very near. I mean, I may need to reflect on that anyway at this point, because they did obviously start to play a bit better. But Spain in that game literally was so static. Yes, they had people positioned well on the pitch, but there wasn't really much movement at all. And actually, up against an energetic African side who were going to press them. JK, you've got tremendous football knowledge. I'm not surprised to hear you say perhaps you saw a banana skin there for the Spanish, but they found themselves in the quarterfinal stages, Morocco, which is quite an achievement.
It's a great achievement for a side which I think was inhibited by the previous manager's grudge against players such as Hakim Ziyech, who for me is the linchpin of this Morocco side. If I go to their...
Ashraf Hakimi has been sensational as well. Mm,
really, really good.
If I look at the coaching history, yes, Vahid Halohodzic, definitely butchered that. Bosnian coach, did have a... got to the 2021 quarterfinals for the AFCON, and his successor, Valid Regragui, has not only matched that, I would say bettered that, by getting to a World Cup quarterfinal. And obviously we have to talk about Yacine Bounou. What a goalkeeping performance in the penalty shootout.
Oh, fantastic.
He's a great goalkeeper. I'm sure Erling Haaland will disagree with us, but after Dortmund versus Sevilla last season. But again, I think very, very commanding. And apart from Sarabia, who hit the post, all of Spain's penalties were saved. So, and then obviously Hakimi Pen anchors it in with probably been training with Benzema. That's why he was, no wonder, because he was at La Fabrica and then obviously went to Dortmund and then Inter, now at PSG. So definitely be taking a few lessons. One player who really impressed me, there was Sofyan Amrabat, younger brother of Nordin Amrabat, used to play for Malaga and Watford, if you remember him, right winger. Plays for Fiorentina, really, really energetic, good midfielder, I think. A lot of Premier League clubs are looking for him. Laviola will sell him for about 15, 20 million euros, so don't be surprised if he gets a move. Naif Aguerre from West Ham, has been injured most of the season, recently come back, thought he was okay as well. Obviously, Hakim Ziyech. Saiss had to go off after that clearance because he's down his hamstring. And then his...
That's a big loss to them.
Definitely. Definitely. His replacement didn't do too well. I don't remember his replacement's name, but he was the only Moroccan who missed his penalty. So, but on a whole, absolutely great game for Morocco, I'd say. Speaking of great games, Brazil versus South Korea, or do you want to talk about Portugal, Switzerland first?
I think I've got Portugal, Switzerland on my list of things I wanted to bring up in this episode, because when we were off last week, I actually made a set of predictions on my own to just see how I was doing. And I predicted a narrow 1-0 squeaker for Portugal. And then they didn't start Ronaldo. And in a story we've seen before this season, the team that drops Ronaldo from their starting 11 suddenly starts playing with a lot more energy and a lot more attacking intent. I don't want to infer anything. No, I do want to infer something from that, actually. I don't think... Portugal will almost certainly beat Morocco. In the next match in the quarterfinal,
you think so?
They looked so much better with Gonçalo Ramos up front.
Yeah, agreed.
So much better. They had not just a focal point, but one that could move and one that could run and one that actually still had some shot power left, as we saw from that incredible near post finish for his first goal.
What did I say though? I've been talking about Benfica all season.
You have.
I've been talking about how good Benfica have been all season, and Gonçalo Ramos is. In the Primeira Liga, he is a bit wasteful, in my opinion. He's only got 9 goals. He's the top scorer, but Benfica could create chance after chance after chance. And I was surprised, but I wasn't as surprised as the mainstream, because I know what he can do as a finisher, and he linked play really well as well. Obviously, got a hat trick and an assist. 2 goals were with his weaker foot as well. Although, if I'm being very harsh, knowing that he could have elite level potential because he was targeted by Bayern in the summer.
I think he's too expensive for Bayern. I think he's got a buyout clause of
100 million euros.
Yeah,
He'll be way too expensive for any team.
Well, there'll be a lot of money flying around after this World Cup.
Yeah, there's always a couple of interesting transfers, and you think about James Rodriguez a few years ago as well. Mm. You always find, you know, the best, how can I phrase this in the right way? The sort of top players from a World Cup tournament who are perhaps playing in less prestigious teams, not competing for honours presently in their domestic leagues, will often get the moves. I think it's fair to say. I think you've mentioned one or two, JK, already.
Well, let's not forget as a throwback. Mm. Man United signing Kleberson after the 2002 World Cup.
Oh my goodness me, he was a...
I can see Mr. Jennings reliving the memories of Kleberson for the first time in, what, 10 years?
And Djemba, yep. Playing midfield, what a midfield pairing that was, my goodness me.
I wasn't born, so I did have to experience it.
You are very fortunate to have done that, JK.
But another player who really impressed me in that team was, and arguably in my opinion, man of the match, despite Gonçalo Ramos getting a hat-trick, was... a certain João Félix. Dare I say, when he gets going, he reminds me a bit of a certain 5'7" left-footed Argentine man. And I'm not talking about Maradona.
It was his run, wasn't it? There was one run he had in the second half where he started with his back to goal in his own half and went round, I think, 5 Swiss players. And that was the moment. That was the first time. And I've watched him annoyingly play against Man United a few times now. And he's always done okay, but I've never been tremendously... I've never been 130 million euros impressed by him. He's, that was the first time that I went, oh, okay, he's a player.
His manager at Atletico Madrid has not been, I suppose, in fairness to Simeone, I imagine that he has built up a framework in João Félix when it comes to positional football, out of possession football, knowing where you need to be to cover spaces. I can't question that. I imagine as a player, he's improved his game in certain ways. JK, I know what you're talking about, but for me, it was somebody else. I thought at times, and I had to, on one or two occasions, rub my eyes to double check that I wasn't seeing things. I saw Kaká. Yeah, I saw Kaká playing football.
That's a really good call, actually.
And I sort of looked two or three times, and because he even looks like him. This is the problem. And I sort of was rubbing my eyes thinking, hang on a minute, what the hell's going on here? Some sort of throwback to, you know, the Brazilians of the noughties. And yeah, very, very similar. It's the way he moved with the ball, as you said. He had great spatial awareness. He knew when to turn onto his left or his right and drive into space. What a player. And for me, I agree with you, the man of the match.
Santos picked the right team. So starting off with Dalot at right back, I think Cancelo's not had a great tournament. Again, in a system which doesn't really suit him, if I'm being bluntly honest. I think the Man City system is so well drilled into Cancelo. It's like, let's say you experience something at the highest level possible and then everything else is going to be worse, if that makes sense. And I just think Dalot is a better fit. And then Rafael Guerreiro, left back, been very consistent. I've always liked him since he moved from Lorient to Dortmund. But the midfield is where I think Santos got it right. And that's because you had Carvalho sitting, and William Carvalho has been doing that for Portugal for years. I remember having a Carvalho shirt from the 2014 World Cup. And
very cool.
Just very secure on the ball and very hard to get off the ball as well. And then you had Bernardo Silva and Otávio. And I think Otávio, Brazilian, got Portuguese citizenship. He's just got a lot of grit. And he symbolises that Porto team perfectly. So,
how good is Bruno Fernandes as well?
He was good. I think throughout
the tournament.
He's probably deserving of the golden ball at the moment. He's probably the player of the tournament, dare I say.
He has been apps, and I think we've been blessed as Man United players. I think there's been a really outstanding, performances game to game as well by lots of Man United players, which we're always going to be slightly biased over. I get that. But it has been a real reminder just of how good Bruno is. And let's face it, he's been playing out of position as well to accommodate midfielders. He's just a very, very good footballer. Mm. And I don't think the gap in quality between Kevin De Bruyne and Bruno Fernandes is actually quite as vast as people think it is.
I wonder when Man United get their system sorted.
Yeah.
I think that may bear more fruit than it seems like it does at club level at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
I think that Kevin De Bruyne had a really bad tournament. Let's be bluntly honest. Belgium had a bad tournament. Mm. I do think there is a gap. It's not a chasm. I would say it's the space between two cars on the motorway, for example. To use that analogy, but I mean, Pep's header, what a great header from Pep, the central defender.
Mm.
He's a warrior. He's going to be 40, but just a great player. And then obviously you have Rafael Leão. I mean, what more can I say about him? He comes on, plays a little 1-2 with Guerreiro and then just rifles it in the opposite side of the goal. So, I mean,
it's like a cheat code. You're already winning 5-1.
You bring on someone who's as fast and as powerful as Rafael Leão running at your defence.
And I think that's the scary thing about Portugal, is that where they've got depth, and this is what I think Southgate is kind of thinking of when he looks at players like Marcus Rashford, for example, in this tournament. I think we'll probably see tomorrow a Foden, Saka,
yeah,
and who was the other player that played in the bank of three behind Kane in the last game started?
Jude, Henderson, and Rice.
That was it. It was, and then if we think about Bellingham as maybe being that other sort of third attacking midfielder, there he seems to prefer that setup in terms of a starting 11, and I guess that's probably what he's thinking. He wants to have something different left in the. In his back pocket. I think that's what we're seeing with Portugal. They've got one or two players, question marks around Ronaldo and whether or not he should be even featuring in the Portuguese side at all at this point, really, especially after the last fixture. But having Rafael Leão on the bench is one hell of an impact sub. Mm.
I think there are similarities to Rashford in terms of the style of play and stature. I do think Rafael Leão is more powerful, though. In terms of, if you look at Marcus Rashford, you look at Rafael Leão. In a shoulder-to-shoulder, I'm backing Rafael Leão to out-muscle Marcus Rashford. I'd say so.
Yeah, but Rashford's got, he's got great set-piece delivery. He's a better finisher.
Is he though? Leão, I don't see Rashford, A, getting into that position, if I'm being honest, as a Man United fan. Getting into that position, or even having the technique to curl it in from there. I think Rashford would go for power there.
You've seen him take free kicks though, JK. He's got it in his locker.
It's very hit and miss. He's better than Cristiano Ronaldo at free kicks, current Cristiano Ronaldo at free kicks.
His weakness has been the short ones, and actually it was the short one he scored when he played for England the other day.
It was a good free kick, wasn't it? Mm.
I think hopefully that's something Benny McCarthy will work on with him in the on the training ground.
Definitely.
Moving on to the other.
Well, I tell you what, I know Mr. Jennings has got to jet off soon. So should we get some predictions in for the quarterfinals and then we can delve into the weeds afterwards?
And did I send you a predictions for the round of 16?
No, you didn't, no.
Ah, that's my bad.
That's okay.
Sorry for that, guys. So Jake and the rest of the world had to take a 1 week sabbatical for that.
You do realise that by forfeiting that week, you are now automatically 50 points behind the rest of the world team, just so you know.
Okay.
We thought that would be fair.
Yeah.
All right. We still have the rest of the season to go, though. So World Cup's a World Cup, but at the same time. Anyway, Croatia-Brazil. Mr. Jennings, you want to kick us off?
I think Croatia have got the best midfield three left in the tournament. I think Casemiro is the best holding midfielder in the world, but I'm not convinced by Fred, and Lucas Paqueta is a proper player, but I he's one of these players for me that doesn't necessarily have a certain position on the football pitch. So I think Croatia in the midfield battle beat Brazil's midfield three, but I don't think Croatia have got the firepower to get through this game. This could be a really poor game to watch. So I'm going to say that this will go the full 90 and end up as a draw. And I will say that it's got 1-1 written on it as a 90-minute fixture. Wow.
Do you want to chuck in a winner on pens?
Yeah.
Not for points, just for pride.
Mr. Atherton is looking for an England-Brazil final. I am going to have to go with him. I think Brazil will get through this game. I'm not. What's playing on my mind is, let's face it, we've seen some shocks already. And I'm just looking at this and thinking Croatia are not a bad side. In Luka Modric, they've got probably the best central midfielder left in the tournament. If we're just looking through those teams, Frankie de Jong is a player. Jude Bellingham is good, but he's still a bit young. Yeah, okay, Brazil to win, but not in 90 minutes.
Mr. Ferguson?
I don't know which Croatia you've been watching all tournament. I've been really disappointed by them. I think they were incredibly lucky to get through that Japan match. They did not play well. They didn't play anywhere close to their potential. Granted, their potential is good because they do have a good midfield three. Yeah. Though I think JK and I both disagree that they have the best midfield three in the World Cup.
Only left in the tournament, though. So Brozovic, okay. Kovacic and Modric.
Even then.
In terms of those three, is there another side that's got the quality as in terms of a starting three in comparison to those? I'm not sure there is. Argentina's midfield three, no.
France?
No way. England have got a better midfield than France. Portugal, Carvalho's a good player, but he's no Brozovic.
Can I just say, I think a Brazilian midfield of Neymar, Casemiro and Paqueta is...
I'm not taking Neymar
in the middle.
I'm not having Neymar.
Neymar's
a 10.
Neymar's a 10.
That's not the same. As a midfield three.
But Brazil player too. And they play Paqueta and Casemiro. And dare I even say, I think... Neymar in a free role. He's got Vinicius on the left. He's got Rafinha on the right. Who, by the way, people have been raving about Rafinha. I think he's been absolutely rubbish the whole tournament.
Yeah, I agree.
And then you got Rashad. I think Neymar, Paqueta and Casemiro as a three, because I know, Mr. Jennings, you, in your, at the second 11, you do also play, at times you play with midfield three with an attacking midfielder. So by that logic, I'm going to go for Brazil having the best midfield three. But sorry to hijack that.
Yeah, the prediction, Brazil are far too good for Croatia. If it goes to extra time even, I'll be shocked. I've got Brazil. I, I'm I'm so confident about it. I'm going to say 4-0 Brazil.
Wow. Okay. Sarah and I are. We've actually at times trodden each on each other's toes with regards to predictions. Today we are. This is going to be a good one.
I'm going to go.
I'll email you later.
I'm going to go 3-0 Brazil, and I'm going to say Croatia will have 3 shots on target. Three shots.
Goodness me.
How are you feeling now, Mr. Jennings?
I'm feeling like I've hung myself out to dry here. But anyway, let's wait and see. I stand
by.
Might
be with points.
Yeah, they're in the quarterfinals for a reason. They won the Euros. They knocked us out of the World Cup.
Yes.
4 years ago. I think Croatia are a better side than you guys are giving them credit for. But we will see. We will see.
Netherlands, Argentina, the rematch of the 2014 semi-final. Mr. Ferguson, kick us off, please.
I actually think this will be a really good game. And I didn't think that at the start of the tournament, because I thought they were both pretty rubbish at the start of the tournament. But they have both grown into this a lot. I think this could be quite good. I'm picking with heart here, because although I've been knocked out of the sweepstakes by virtue of Netherlands and Brazil being on the same side of the draw now... But I've still now got a soft spot for Netherlands. I do think Argentina have been great. I think Messi has been great this tournament, which I haven't been able to say that often, to be honest. Do I think there's enough that... You know what? I'm going for a 2-2. I'm going to, for fun, say that Argentina will win on penalties. But the prediction I'm going for after 90 minutes is 2-2.
I'm going to go 2-1 after extra time.
To
Argentina.
Okay.
Mr. Jennings?
There is a really interesting stat which I love to give. This one I'm not going to be able to get it absolutely spot on, but I believe this is the case. I do not believe that the Netherlands have lost a competitive game of football under Louis van Gaal, and I believe the last time they lost a fixture in 90 minutes was on the 27th of June 2001 would be unreal.
That would be incredible.
They've won X number of tournaments since 2021. So form is probably in the Netherlands' favour if you consider the shock group game result that Argentina experienced. But I think Argentina are too good for the Netherlands. I don't think... I like Cody Gakpo, but I think that Argentina have got too much here. So I'm going to say that Argentina will win this in 90 minutes 2-1.
Oh, you've got the same prediction.
But I'm going after extra time, so...
Okay. So are you saying 1-1?
1-1 full-time, 2-1 after extra time. Julian Alvarez to get the winner.
Oh my goodness.
I'm going to kick us off with Morocco against Portugal. Does he start the same 11? That's the question. I don't think for Fernando Santos you can start Ronaldo again. I just don't see it. And Portugal are my team in the sweepstakes. I had Portugal and Switzerland actually, unfortunately, in the sweepstakes at my boarding house. But now I have Portugal. So ultimately, I'm going to go for a... this is going to be a tough one. 2-0 Portuguese victory. And am I going to go as confident in the scores? I think João Félix will have a great game again. That's all I'm going to say. Mr. Ferguson.
This isn't a score prediction. This is a prediction of whether Ronaldo is going to start. Because if Ronaldo starts, I think Morocco win. I truly cannot predict whether he's going to start or not. It's a huge call to leave Ronaldo out of two consecutive World Cup knockout games.
Gonçalo Ramos has got a hat-trick. And as we see on our screen in front of us, the anthem for the 2018 World Cup's come on. How ironic. But... You can't leave someone who just got a hat trick.
I don't think Ronaldo starts this game.
I can't believe I'm saying this. I don't want him to.
No. But for Portugal's sake, I think it's the right call, isn't it? Not to start.
But I think he will. I think he will. And for that reason, I'm going. I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm going 1-0 Morocco.
Love it. Okay, I'm going to go 1-0 Portugal.
Ooh.
1-0 Portugal.
Any scorer predictions?
You've got to go with the guy that scored the hat-trick.
Gonçalo Ramos.
Yeah, I think he's I like him. Good striker.
I think Rafael Leão will cause Portugal? No, he's Portuguese. He will cause Morocco problems when he comes on. And Rafael Leão... Very, very similar player to a certain Thierry Henry, in my opinion. But speaking of Thierry Henry, England versus France. Hey, I've been doing this a while. Decent segue. Mr. Ferguson, kick us off, please.
Pick a score out of a hat, folks. I don't have a clue what's going on here. The only thing on my mind is I've got a nasty feeling Southgate's going to try and pick Calvin Phillips in the midfield. I think he's going to try and shore up the midfield to deal with Mbappe and Griezmann and Dembele.
Five at the back?
He could do that. I wouldn't be totally surprised. If he changes the system, France run away with this. Because France are too good. If England play as they've played in the rest of the tournament, they could... I actually think they could do a number on France. And I really don't have a clue what score I'm picking for this game. I don't. So for the sake of picking something, I'm going for... I think there's going to be goals in this game. I think it's going to be a great game. And I'm going 3-1 England.
I can't believe it. I knew you were going to pick my score. I knew it. I just genuinely... okay. Literally, that was going to be my guess. I have to go 3-2 then, don't I? 3-2 England.
I'm with 3-1 France.
Gents, pleasure.
As always.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jennings.
Oh, right.
I mean, actually, Hank, before we go, Mr. Jennings, just off mic, Real Betis, Man United, friendly prediction.
Well, after Man United's Cadiz performance, I can't imagine we're going to play any worse. Betis are a good side. I don't know how many players Betis have got in the World Cup, that's the question. So I'd like to think it's going to be a better performance. 2-2 scored.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yeah... I don't know. 1-0 United. I don't have a clue.
I'm going to go 3-2 Betis. Very against what I want to say, but it is what it is.
JK, I want to talk to you about Jude Bellingham.
Okay, talk to me.
I think, I'd love to have had Mr. Jennings' opinion on this if we'd had time to talk about it. Surely after this World Cup, if you are an elite club in Europe or anywhere around the world, you have to be looking at every single option you have to be able to finance a 100 to 130 million pound, 130 million euro move for Jude Bellingham in January or in the summer.
Hear me out on this one. The likelihood of him staying at Dortmund is not as far-fetched as people make it out to be, because the 2023 market, he's only 19, and I think another year at Dortmund... This season's been a bit mixed, if I'm being dead honest. And I've been watching him since 2020, since he moved to Dortmund. And I was one of the first people in my circle who was watching Jude Bellingham with a keen eye. And I was like, this guy is actually really good. And then the gravy train sort of started on him, what, a year and a half ago, I'd say?
He's been in the public eye for a while, because there was talk even about the on the BBC about him when he moved, because Bellingham retired his shirt number.
Of course, but the main, I'm talking mainstream media, it's been a year and a half, hasn't it? So I was early on that one. And I'd say that, without patting myself too much on the back, every club has to go for him, every elite club. He will have the pick of the clubs he wants to go to. In my mind, you don't say no to Real Madrid if they come calling. But
see, strangely, Real Madrid are almost the one club who can afford not to go for him, because they do have the best midfield in Europe.
And they might even go for Enzo Fernandez instead.
They might, yeah. It's a possibility. But yeah, I don't discredit the fact that he may not choose to move, but I think Dortmund are going to have so much paperwork to get through in the next transfer market. I truly don't see a team he can't help. He's played basically.
I'll be dead honest. I don't think he can help Man City.
That's a fair point. I think he. Oh, it'd be terrifying if you gave him time under Guardiola.
Of course, but I don't think people saying he's going to go to Man City. It's not as logical as people think it to be, because you've got Gundogan, you've got Bernardo Silva, you've got Kevin De Bruyne, you've got Rodri, you've got Fernandinho obviously left. But
do you think he could be a Rodri replacement?
I think that's restricting his game a lot.
Yeah.
He could be a Rodri replacement. That's why he wears number 22, right? 4, 8, 10. Foden can play in there. I think Foden's long-term future's in there as well. Mm. So as one of the free eights, Jack Grealish can play in there. That's six players right there. So
City are City. City want the best.
Of course.
That's how you win the Premier League.
And do I see Gundogan possibly leaving? Maybe.
I think Gundogan I wouldn't quite peg as exactly a Bellingham position, purely because Gundogan does so much work as almost as a striker for City as well.
In a way, yes. But I'm just saying in terms of the midfield space in the squad, that's the only way I see it. Liverpool's the obvious one.
Liverpool have made a lot of noises, and certainly the Liverpool fan base in the last couple of days have been very confident.
But the Liverpool fan base have been making noises since the 90s, and they only won it leaked out in 2020. So what's that
to
go for?
And to be fair, I do see a lot of it. One of our old presenters on here, Chris Stairs, who now works at BBC Radio Newcastle, he was a big Liverpool fan. So I see a lot of Liverpool stuff on our Jukebox Twitter account at Welly Jukebox. And and they've been very vocal about what they think is Jude Bellingham coming to them.
Liverpool in the same boat as Man United, apart from the fact that they have an older squad. Well, actually, similar-ish squad. I would say United have better younger players. If United get Champions League and Liverpool get Champions League, what's a more attractive proposition to Jude Bellingham?
It may depend on the sale at this point.
And who's further down the line? That we don't know, so... That's that about Jude Bellingham.
Yeah.
Any other players? So I wanted to cater the segment to players of the tournament.
Mm.
Who are your players of the tournament so far? Again, this is stats. Stats have been overused in football. I love stats.
I'm not worrying about stats. I don't really look at stats anymore, to be honest, because they can really tell you whatever you want to see.
True.
Because there are so many stats these days. It feels like such an easy pick, but actually you don't see it very often in international tournaments. Lionel Messi.
He's been good.
It's not just that he's been good. He's been good in an Argentina side that's been misfiring a lot.
True.
He has basically dragged Argentina through the tournament so far.
Enzo Fernandez has been very good as well.
Yeah, he has. But I think without Messi, Argentina don't get through. Without Enzo Fernandez, they might not get through. They probably wouldn't. Without Messi, they definitely wouldn't.
100%. That Messi dependency of the Barcelona experience has now been transferred to Argentina. Speaking of actually worst players of the tournament, I'm going to go Lautaro Martinez. I think he's been absolutely rubbish. Although Julian Alvarez has been amazing, I think. Man City have a real gem in Julian Alvarez.
Oh yeah, Alvarez. So I thought you said Lisandro Martinez for a moment. I was thinking, didn't he play really well when he came off the bench?
No, Lautaro Martinez.
I get confused because they've got Lautaro and Lisandro and Emi as well.
Yeah, true. Actually, Emi's real name is Damian. Would you believe it?
Oh.
Emiliano's his middle name. But I've just been... Argentina, Messi's been very good. I think João Félix has grown into the tournament. Jude Bellingham, obviously, that's an obvious pick. Bruno Fernandes is an obvious pick.
Yep. And obviously, Mbappe is an obvious pick.
Mbappe, yes, of course. Richarlison's been good. Mbappe's been winning me a lot of points.
I think this tournament has shown why Tottenham signed Richarlison more than I think his league play has shown. I think he's really, really good as the attacking focal point for Brazil.
Possible. I think another reason why I don't think Jude Bellingham will go this summer is, if you look at the types of players who could move in this summer's, well, next summer's transfer window, you've got Vlahovic who could move, Bellingham who could move, Harry Kane who could move, Enzo Fernandez who could move.
We've been saying Harry Kane could move for, what, 5 summers
and
now?
He's got a year left on his deal. And by need a striker. You've got Rafael Leão who could be on the move as well. His contract expires. So here's 5 players who, in my opinion, could cost 100 million... circa 100 million, if not 100 million plus.
It probably will end up depending, actually, of those players you just named, how many of them can translate the international form they've shown over this World Cup into the into their club form again once they come back. If any of them can hold that up, yeah, they're going for 9 figures at least.
I was just naming 5 players who I think we're going to go for 100 million plus, regardless of World Cup or not. I thought Mohamed Kudus was good as well. I really like Mohamed Kudus. He was really good for Ghana. Japanese goalkeeper Gonda I thought was very good as well, but I'm not going to let my FIFA bias, because I've been playing kickoff with Japan a lot, so I'm not going to let my FIFA bias take over.
No,
but
he was good.
Gonda's been good.
And, where's Aaron Moy at the moment?
Celtic.
He's at Celtic. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get a move back into the Prem, because he had a good tournament. He was solid.
He's 30 now.
He's 30, that still gives him a few good years, though.
True. You
know, I think
true.
There's a relegation level Premier League side who could really do with someone like Aaron Moy in their squad.
But would you rather win a title or be part of a relegation team? That's the only thing. That's true. He's already been to China. He's already got his money. Mm. So, who else are I going to say? So in terms of disappointments of the tournament, Switzerland, I'd say, were disappointing, but Mbolo's shown why he plays for Monaco.
Yeah, really good.
I think if he wasn't as injury prone, I think Mbolo would be a top player.
Poland for me.
Yeah, just absolute.
And they made it through the group stages. I don't know how they managed that. I thought
because Mexico were that bad as well.
And Mexico were better than Poland though. In my mind, I think
Saudi Arabia were the second best team in that tournament.
They were at least in terms of work rate and in terms of attempts to try and play football. I think the only reason Poland got through is because they had a naturally more talented squad than Mexico. But they both played really badly, and Poland then played really badly against France too.
And that's that. Those teams make me think: how did Colombia and Chile and Peru not get through? Like, how bad do you, those couple teams? Granted, they're from different confederations, but it's still mind-boggling. In terms of, like, let's go worst players of the tournament. I just said Lautaro Martinez straight up, because that's something that comes to mind. I think Pablo Gomez. Hope maybe he can channel his inner Beckham now after his after his new haircut. I'll go. This might sound harsh, but I do think Harry Kane's had his worst tournament to date. Granted, that's statistical bias, but at the same time, England.
I think people have figured out how to play against him, more or less. They've certainly stopped him scoring as much and stopped him assisting as much. He is still able to dictate the game from those sort of those wide midfield positions, though. Not quite the winger positions, but slightly further back. Sort of, you know, that little sort of pocket in front of the halfway line. Yeah.
And actually, fun fact, did you know Harry Kane was a central midfielder in Tottenham's youth system?
That doesn't surprise me terribly, to be honest.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't surprise me at all. As a fellow central midfielder who does play up front from time to time, you could ask Mr. Jennings. But that doesn't surprise me at all. And I don't know, I've just not been impressed. I'll be very honest with you. I think England have been good, but expectations need to be tempered here. I think Aurelien Tchouaméni's been not a great tournament by his standards, but I think he'll be very, very key for France against England.
Yeah, there's so much in that England-France match. I plucked a number out of thin air, to be honest with you. That prediction I have no faith in whatsoever. It could go anywhere. There's even a chance it could just be a bit of a slugfest, although with Mbappe in a France team, I think that's unlikely.
I think Theo Hernandez versus Kyle Walker's going to be very, very interesting. I think whoever's on that right side, because Mbappe will come inside, can Kyle Walker... I think Kyle Walker does have Mbappe in his
pocket, I think Walker's lost a touch of pace.
But Theo Hernandez is going to be a problem. Theo Hernandez, arguably the best left back in the world right now.
I think this match is really going to show up England's lack. All of the injuries England's have had at right back before the tournament started. Because you could have had Reece James out there. Granted, he's more of an attacking threat, but you still could have had him out there, and I think he would have been.
I think Reece James could have played. I think just Southgate didn't want to risk him. I mean, I'll be honest, England don't have an alternative to Harry Kane up front. Callum Wilson is. It's okay, but what does Rashford give you that Callum Wilson? What does Callum Wilson give you that Rashford doesn't? That's why Ivan Toney, in my opinion, would be a better option. But it's interesting. What other players have been good this tournament? Obviously, Gonçalo Ramos has played one game.
Yeah, it's hard to say player of the tournament from one appearance.
That would be ludicrous.
A scoring a hat trick in the World Cup final in single and doing a goal line clearance to save the winner in the last minute.
Being dead honest with you, I think let's just do golden ball, silver ball predictions so far. I think Bruno Fernandes deserves the golden ball. Do I think he'll get the golden ball? I think he'll get the silver ball at least, because I do see Portugal getting to the semis at least. Golden ball would be between Messi and Mbappe. Unless Portugal make it to the final, which is also possible.
I think at this point, There are several contenders here, but they are all contenders who are in the quarterfinals. Do you think there are any contenders who aren't in the quarterfinals, who've already been knocked out?
No, because if they were that good throughout the tournament, their team would be in the quarterfinals.
Exactly. So I think that it's actually quite difficult to tell that at the moment, because it will depend on who goes through the quarters. Mm. I think it's, if a player gets to the semis, if they don't make it to the final, I don't think that's the end of the world for their golden ball chances.
True. Because Messi did get the golden ball in the 2014 World Cup.
Yeah. I think silver ball is young player, isn't it? Is that correct?
We're gonna have to do a quick Google search. Because
I know there's a player of the tournament and a young player of the tournament. And I assume that's what the silver ball is for.
FIFA World Cup awards. So we have the golden ball, silver ball. Eden Hazard got it last World Cup, and actually, there's also a bronze ball.
Oh.
So I
assume that's just first, second, and third then?
Yep. Also, Alisson's nailed on for the Golden Glove, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Alisson's been incredible.
Just
really, really
super,
good.
Super easy for Alisson. Golden Boot winner.
Ooh.
I think this has a certain Kylian from France written all over.
Well, he's 2 goals clear of the competition at the moment.
And Harry Kane did only get 6 last time. Mm. Hamas Rodriguez got 6. Müller got 5 the tournament before. R9 got 8 in 2002. Mm. A player he would have been if he didn't have unstable knees.
Mm. We've got Mbappe on 5. And then of the teams still left in, we've got on 3 goals, Gonçalo Ramos now. From one match, Messi, Rashford, Saka, Giroud, Richarlison, and Gakpo.
Yeah, Mbappe's got that. Golden Ball. I'm gonna go. Golden Ball would be Messi and Mbappe. Silver Ball would be Bruno Fernandes, and then Bronze Ball will be. Here's a shout. Vinicius Junior for Bronze or Silver Ball. That's what I'm gonna go for.
Okay.
Or Richarlison. One of the two.
I'd be more inclined to say Richarlison there. I think purely because they'd be more likely to pick a goal scorer.
Vinicius Junior's, in my opinion, been one of Brazil's best players in the tournament. Eder Militao, by the way, really, really good at right back. I've been really impressed.
Do you think for the young player of the tournament, is it going to be Bellingham or Enzo Fernandez?
It's a hard one, I think. Depends on who goes through.
It probably does, yeah. I mean, there's a chance that it could be, if England do beat France and Portugal do beat Morocco, could be an England-Portugal semi-final.
Mm. Could very well be an England-Portugal semi-final, I think. It's a hard one. It is.
They've both played really well.
True. I mean, I'll be dead honest. I don't see why Brazil picked Pedro or Everton Ribeiro. If they picked Endrick, and Endrick would have probably played against the team they played last, in the group, I think that was Cameroon.
Let me just go back and check.
Yeah, it was Cameroon. They lost 1-0. I think, yeah, Endrick would have been great. But yeah, Brazil were amazing.
South Korea it was.
That was round of 16. I was talking about last group stage.
Yeah, no, that was the last group stage match.
Brazil-South Korea.
Oh, sorry, no, you were talking about Brazil. I thought you were talking about Portugal.
No, I was talking about Brazil. Yeah, Endrick would have been... But Endrick is going to Real Madrid, as you've probably seen Fabrizio Romano tweet. Mm. 60 million euros plus 12 million euros in taxes. It's big money, big money. But he's still got 2 years at Palmeiras. So let's see that in 2024. Talk to me. Brazil were amazing against South Korea. I thought that Paqueta, Neymar, Casemiro sort of triangle just works, right?
Yeah.
And having Neymar in the team, Brazil are a better side.
I think Brazil are a better team with Neymar in, but not for anything he brings. I think it's that he gives the opposition a player that they have to mark.
100%.
And that gives space to everyone else. Now, that's what Ronaldo was so good for previously, was that not only was he a good player, he forced you to stick a player on him. That's what Messi forces you to do as well. Stick a player on him to take him out of the game.
Not as directly as Neymar affects the game, just because Neymar will just take on players... left, right, and centre, and
but for all three of them, it creates space for the rest of the team to play in as well. So Neymar can attack his man and attack the defence when he beats his man, because he probably will, but the rest of the team get more space to play the game as well.
I'll be honest, Brazil's weakest point in this World Cup has actually been that right wing spot. I've not been impressed by Antony or Rafinha, to be honest. I think Rafinha's been very, very wasteful. If he was slightly better decision making, and again, he is a better footballer than myself, but a pass across, I think he just feels the anxiety of just wanting to score. But, you know, he could have had 3 assists, he could have had 2 goals. But I think it'll come. Maybe this is the Croatia game is where Rafinha, because he will start. Rafinha finally sets this tournament alight. Let's see. I think it'd be a good place to wrap it up. So
we can. I just want to touch quickly because we haven't spoken since the end of the group stages.
True.
So I wanted to talk about the shocker, but the predicted shocker of Germany going out in the group stages.
True.
It was, and it never really felt like they stood a chance.
Not really.
It was very, very strange to watch in this tournament. Aside from the bright spot of Jamal Musiala,
yeah, Musiala maybe should have picked England. I'll be dead honest with you. If Musiala picks England, it'll be a Bellingham Rice Musiala midfield. So,
oh, that'd be saucy.
I think he is. Dare I say, I think he's more consistent than Bukayo Saka. I think he's better than Bukayo Saka.
I don't hate that shout.
Or even Phil Foden might be a stretch.
I think Phil Foden is more consistent at this point. If you'd said that to me maybe 2 years ago, I think I probably would have agreed with you. But I think Foden now has got that consistency in his game. It's got to the point, and I used to think this about Foden and Mount and who's the other young English midfielder that sort of is lumped in a triumvirate with these two? Oh goodness!
Who does he play for?
It's one of the big Premier League teams. Maybe I'm just making things up.
Dele Alli?
No, it's one of the young ones, like one of their age. No, I think I'm making things up now. but of Foden and Mount, I previously had thought that they were both young players who the media was overhyping because they had skill, but not as much skill as I thought people were making them out to do. Foden has absolutely gone miles beyond that now. He is, I'm surprised he's not a regular starter for England at this point.
Yeah.
I don't think Mount has lived up to that potential.
Not really.
And I think Saka now has entered that point where he can kick on and cement himself as a regular starter, but he needs that consistency. And I think you're right. I think Musiala has been really, really good for Germany. Admittedly, it's quite good, easy to be good in a team that bad. But yeah, I've just not been impressed. And you know, Germany and Belgium as well. I think there's two aging squads there.
I didn't call Morocco and Croatia getting through,
mm.
but I did say Belgium were going to struggle this tournament in our second ever episode.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised. Am I surprised by Uruguay and Ghana getting dumped out of the group stage? Yes. I thought Uruguay were going to be a bit better, but...
Uruguay had a really poor tournament. They were just... I was surprised how much lethargy there was going around in some of the group stage matches. It really didn't feel
intense. Not at all. I'll be honest. I think this tournament... possibly because I'm at a conscious age now to interpret football, but it shows you that club football is levels above international football.
Mm.
Because, and it shows you that system more than player is king. Because you look at Federico Valverde in a Real Madrid system versus him in the Uruguay system.
Mm. And he was still
night and day.
And he was still the best player in the Uruguay team, but he couldn't influence things the way he can in the Real Madrid midfield.
And if you look at João Cancelo as well, Bernardo Silva had a good game, but João Cancelo's prime example as well, Kevin De Bruyne.
And when you were talking about Cancelo earlier, I was thinking, Phil Foden, I think, is possibly the only City player at this tournament to have actually performed fairly well.
Bernardo's been inconsistent, but...
I've not been tremendously impressed by him, as I haven't particularly by Kyle Walker either, actually. I think he's been caught out a few more times than I'd have liked.
I see that. I do see that. Man United players have had a good tournament. We've got 11 players in the quarterfinals. So the likelihood of a Man United player winning the World Cup is pretty high.
I think it's 75% at the moment. The only teams who don't have Man United players are Croatia and Morocco, yeah.
And most likely both of them will go out. So you could see a Man United player lifting the World Cup. Please don't be Harry Maguire. imagine Harry Maguire lifting the World Cup.
Well, you know, now you've said that, he's gonna score a header in the final. He's gonna run over. He's gonna do his knee slide, hands cupping his ears celebration again.
And imagine I will be in the stands for the final. So imagine he does that, and I'm like, oh no, I spoke into existence. But yeah,
get your advance bets in on that one now.
Oh dear. To be honest, any stadium you were impressed by?
Any stadia?
Yeah.
I still really like Stadium 974. I think it's really pretty. I think the rest of them, they're a little bit sort of like the Bird's Nest Stadium in China for the Olympics in 2008. Very pretty stadiums, but I think they're almost too pretty.
Sure.
They've been made to look really, really nice, and I appreciate that. But it doesn't look natural. I think the Stadium 974, I think, embraces the starkness of a stadium. And I think it really works for it.
And speaking of China, China are my outside bet to host the 2030 World Cup. You heard it here first.
Who's in the bidding process for that at the moment?
I think it was Morocco, Spain, Portugal at one point. Then it was Spain, Portugal, Ukraine. But that was more of a PR move. There's an Egypt, Greece, Turkey bid due to, well, free borders. There was a Saudi Arabia bid with Italy, which didn't make sense. So I think it's just Saudi Arabia. And then I think there'll be the usual tokenistic England bid as well. But don't be surprised if China hosts the 2030 World Cup.
Well, there is a... England were going for the 2028 Euros at one point.
They always will go for the World Cup and Euros. I mean, the FA will always bid for something.
Yeah.
So because the infrastructure is already here and it wouldn't cost that much.
Yeah, here we go. Oh, that's right. So confirmed bids for 2030 are Morocco's got one. Just on its own. We've got Uruguay, Argentina, Paraguay, Chile one bid.
The centenary bid.
And we've got Spain, Portugal and Ukraine.
Yeah.
And then finally an inter-confederation bid between Egypt, Greece and Saudi Arabia.
Egypt, Greece, Saudi Arabia. Don't be surprised if China hosts the World Cup. Because that's where the world's heading, right? So the World Cup went east for Brazil, went down to Qatar and then going to go back west and then eventually go... I think China will host a World Cup at some point. So, yeah, there you have it. Good episode. Thank you guys for listening to this week's O Jogo Bonito episode. And stay tuned for next week. And take care. Have a good one.